have a period with no rain for a while. Maybe dry out where I can walk around my house without getting mud on my feet, my shoes. We're going to start on page 61 today, lesson number 10. If you've got a book with you, there may be one. I see one book back there on the very back if you need a book. Lesson 10, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. You know, I wonder how often many people believe that. A lot of people, I'm afraid, in this world don't believe that. But he starts off talking about that a little bit. But I think we've got several good examples in the Bible here of just exactly what he's talking about in the lesson and what we need to think about in our life. A lot of people won't have a great name, but they forget that good part, don't they? He talks about that. It's Proverbs 22:1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. A lot of times we catch the first part of that phrase. We don't always look at the last part, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. So many people in this world are looking at that, trying to become rich, trying to become great and get their name up in lights. But they forget also what the close of the book, Bible, what Revelation tells us, 14:13. Once we leave here, not only does our name goes with us along with our works, now I'd want to be standing before God with a good name, I think, rather than a lot of other things. I think that's the point he's trying to point out here. But yet many people go after riches and power and so forth, and they suffer a lot of things that they don't have to suffer. But maybe we can avoid some of those items. He starts out with an example of the Tower of Babel in Genesis, the 11th chapter. How many of us remember that story? I had to go back and review some of it. But what was it that made God angry over that situation, among other things? But what was one of the main reasons? Anybody remember? Right there, we're going to reach to be the tower to reach heaven. But what else they said? He said they also made a comment like, "We do this, we'll make ourselves a name." And this was one of those things where they were, again, a lot of times the idea is they were going to be important. God could see where that attitude was going to take them, and yet at the same time it displeased God. So what did God do to those folks? He scattered them abroad. He changed their language where they couldn't understand one another. And, even think about today, the difference in cultures and languages that we struggle with in the world. It would be really something if everybody spoke the same language, wouldn't it? You know, even some of us speak Southern and some of us speak Northern, don't we? Even in this country, right? We lived in New York for a while, and it was a different language up there, quite different. But God confounded their language and scattered them abroad. Then the lesson goes into looking at some great men in the Bible, and he talks about the pattern that these men have. I want us to look for that pattern a little bit as we discuss some of these people. He starts off with David, and King David, except for the lust that he had and the adultery they committed there and the murder. Most everything else we read about David is on the positive side, is it not? I mean, all the way from the time he was a young boy all the way through his life. He points out several things here. Look at what David had said to Goliath in 1 Samuel 17:46. That's in your book there. "This day the Lord will deliver thee into mine hands." Now here's this young, I forget how old he was, around 16, 17, teenager. He's talking to this giant, Goliath, who had defied the entire army of Israel for a good long time. just because of his size and his power. And here comes this boy up here. He says, don't worry about it. God will give you into my hands, and I will smite thee. Then he said, what? I'm going to do what? Take from thee. Took his head. I'll take your head. And I will give the carcass to the host of the Philistines this day under the fowls of the air. What a bold statement. You stop and think about it. But why did he make that statement, and how could he make that statement? Because he was a good man, but he trusted in God, right? God was with him. That's right. And he had faith in God. Page 62. He ran toward Goliath, sunk a stone in his forehead. Then he cut off his head. Just exactly what he told Goliath he was going to do. And the Israelite army then gained power and got their confidence back. He had a great love for God, he said. And the Bible tells us he was a man after God's own heart, even though he made some errors in his life. But what was the difference in when he made an error? What are we talking about? What happened to him? What did he do? He repented. He changed. And he did it in a rather in a significant way that was significant to people who looked at him, could see what he was doing. He had a respect also for King Saul. He was not going to go after Saul, even though Saul tried to kill him. David was not going to hurt Saul. On occasions he had opportunity to do that, but why was he not going to hurt him? He was God's anointed, and David recognized that. So David had respect for Saul because he had respect for God and a love for God. Then he goes to, so what was one of the pieces of pattern that we saw in David? He had faith in God. He loved God. Joel? Good point. His faith was awful strong, because if he had failed there and connecting that stone with Goliath's forehead, what would have happened? He'd been cut to shreds, wouldn't he? Phil? Pardon me. Maybe his parents were godly people and set that example for him. That's very true. Good point. Melinda? He had confidence. He knew that there was, right? He had several, and he knew God was on his side. I think all those comments are exactly right. But he had extreme faith in what he was doing. And that's one of those things I want to look for in that pattern. He had total faith in what God could do through him. Look at Abraham. One of the promises God made to him, he would make him make his name great. We see that happened. But again, how would we like it if God told us that, well, you need to move here and move to India? Or maybe didn't tell us where we're going to go, but you need to leave Saudi Daisy and go to a place I'll tell you. How many of us would be willing to pack up and put what belongings we could in a U-Haul and pull up to the filling station and fill it up with gas and say, okay, now where? How many of us? And essentially that's kind of what Abraham did, is it not? That's a kind of inner. The name Abraham means the father of many what? Many nations. And we know he was promised, you know, that even that he would be able, his descendants would number like the sands of the sea. Enormous promise that he gave them. Even the Jews later on were identified and want to identify themselves with the fact that they were descendants from Abraham. And even today we hear about that, about people who fight over that in the Middle East. about being descendants of Abraham. His name was used by the Hebrew writer as an example of faith. We know that. We all have seen that. Hebrews 11:8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go into a place which he should go after receiving for an inheritance, he was promised some things, was he not? And those promises did not come about even in his lifetime. But yet, based on those promises, Abraham did what? He obeyed God, right? He went forward. By faith, he sojourned into a promised land. He obeyed God based on his faith, not knowing where he was going. And then we have that example also of when he was tested when God told him to offer Isaac as a sacrifice. He didn't hesitate. He went right straight for it. And that was in Genesis, the 22nd chapter, verses 2 and 3, when we hear that voice. Okay, so another part of that pattern. Abraham had what? Had enormous faith in God, and he also obeyed what God had to say. Moses, next example, he talks about, grows up in Pharaoh's house, and yet at the same time, he walks away from all that pomp and power and the elegance that was there. He knows it's not right, and he walks away from it, and he leaves, and he goes off and lives another life. Yet he came out stronger and unaffected by it, did he not? Deuteronomy 34 and verse 7 talks about when Moses was near death. He said he was 120 years old when he died. And yet what was said about him?
His eyes were not dim.
Eyes were not dim? Natural force abated. Now, how many, you know, those of us who've reached a higher age, shall we say, what do we notice? You know, we don't walk quite as fluently as we used to walk, right? Yeah, our strength is gone a little bit, even our eyesight, right? To some extent, most of us are wearing glasses, but here's Moses at an advanced age, and he still has his strength, he still has his eyesight, all of those things. What was said about Moses in one of his, why was he such a great leader, among other things? He's very meek. Meekness is one of those things we've often explained it as an example of power that's under control. It's meek, people are weak and they're strong. They have strength in their meekness that way. And then we remember also that we were told to humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord, and what will happen? He'll lift us up. And we can see examples of that too. So here's David, here's Abraham, and here's Moses. What's another example of what Moses did? Had faith in what God was going to do, went back and faced the Pharaoh there in Egypt, the most powerful man in the world at the time, and he knew God was on his side. Next man he talks about there is Job. Job 1, verse 8, we read, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job? Is there that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect or a blameless man, and an upright man, one that feareth God and esqueeth or turneth away from evil?" Job was a good example of how someone who has attained and has developed and grown in his life, he was blameless before people in the world. And he also blameless before God that way. Not that he was perfect. but Job lived a blameless life. What's one of those other things we remember about Job saying about God later on? Anybody with respect to God's, his faith in God? Anybody remember what he said? Right, though he, that's in Job 13, verse 15, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Now that's powerful too, is it not? Though he slay me, even all these things that had happened to him, he lost his children, he lost all his wealth, he lost his health, and Job is still strong enough in his faith to say, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Do we have that kind of trust and faith in God today? You know, when we look at things that happen in our lives and things that, you know, we know that unless the world ends before long, a lot of us are going to face death, are we not? It's just one of those things. It's a natural part of life. Just like Joshua said, you know, I go the way of all the world. That'll happen to us as well. But do we have that trust in God that if we've done what we should do, that God will take care of us? Top of page 63. Again, what's that pattern that we see? Faith in God and obedience to God, is it not? Those are the patterns. James 5:11, he talks about here, he gives us an example. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord was very pitiful and of tender mercy. God took care of Job. Job was faithful, and God handled. Steve? That's right. Doubt is being without doubt is important. What are we told about a man who starts and looks back? He's also a man of doubt. He's guilty also. God wants us to look forward, not backward, at some of the things that are there. Good point, though. Doubt is another issue that God took it, that wants us to. You know, I appreciate some of the lessons that David has brought recently on the fact that we can understand and know that we are on our way to heaven. We can know in our life here on earth that things are right. We can know that we have a life hereafter and a promise. And, you know, just you can, you know, so many times if you have the opportunity to go to a funeral of a faithful Christian, you know, it's not such a somber occasion from the standpoint of being of the grief. We understand that if a Christian passes on, hey, they're in better situation, right? A lot of the world worries about that, and I know we were talking even this weekend. We've had a house full of people this weekend. And part of our discussion for part of that weekend was some of the cost and things that come up for a funeral. And it's just enormous what people will spend on a funeral. And a lot of funeral directors will tell you, well, it's because these folks feel bad. They're trying to recoup some of the guilt that they felt through their life because of the way they've treated people or haven't treated and have not honored people. And yet they'll spend thousands of dollars on a funeral. And yet a lot of times we look at a funeral as though this is just one more step. It's a Christian who has reached his goal. And it's not the same occasion. And I got a comment down here about Joseph here in a moment. Joseph is the last one he gives us. Joseph was a good man. We remember what happened with Potiphar's wife. She tried to seduce him. And when he would not yield to her advances, Then she determined to ruin his good name, and she set out to do that. But did she succeed? Not really, no. Oh, yeah, she got him thrown into prison, but see, that was didn't harm Joseph from that standpoint. He still had a good name. What did the prison guard do with Joseph? You remember that? He put him over parts of, you know, here's a prisoner, and he's got such a good name and has such a good reputation in there, and they see it in his actions and in his attitude, puts him over part of the prison. That's kind of remarkable. Then even Pharaoh saw it. Genesis 41:38. Can we find such a one as this is? A man in whom the Spirit of God showed. He could see it in what Joseph was doing and how Joseph acted. He also said, therefore, as much as God hath showed thee all this, there, and talking about the dream that he had and so forth, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thee. Wow. Wow. Humble thyself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. He certainly did in the case of Joseph. But what was the pattern that we saw? What was Joseph's attitude toward God? He had faith and trust in God. He obeyed God. He stayed the course in the face of all sorts of problems. Genesis 50:25. God will surely visit thee, Joseph is saying, to his descendants. Talking to the children of Israel there in Egypt. God will surely visit you. He's talking down the road. How long were they in captivity in Egypt? Who remembers? 400 years. And Joseph saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall, he said, ye shall carry up my bones from hence. He was relying on the promise of God, the promise that God made to Abraham in the past. Joseph's looking forward and knows God made the promise. You be sure and carry my bones out of here when you leave. He's telling them what's going to go on in the future, even though he's not there. Because he had faith in God, and he obeyed God. Barnabas is another one he says, mentions here. In the New Testament, we have quite a few things talked about Barnabas. It was Barnabas who came to Paul's rescue. Remember that? When people were afraid of Paul. Acts 9:27. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto them how he had seen the Lord in the way. Talked about how Paul had seen God in the way. Talking about the road to Damascus. And he had spoken to him and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus. And so Barnabas came to his defense. Barnabas came to help him out. Barnabas is brought out several times in the New Testament as a good man with a good name. Page 64. He was also brought out as an example of a generous man. He sold his land, brought the money to the apostles. This is when Ananias and Sapphira saw some of this and wanted to get some of the glory and things for themselves as well. But Barnabas, he had risked his life several times in traveling with Paul and doing some things there, and yet he was still faithful to God. Good example of someone who had a good name. Pardon? Yes. God, at Barnabas. Yeah. And Barnabas listened to what God said and acted on it. Yeah, he did. Good example of that. Very good example of that. Barnabas had a good name. He also knew that the name of Christ is one of the greatest names that ever was. He talks about that, Acts 4th chapter, verse 12. Neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. A good name, Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes 7:1, a good name, it is better than what? Precious ointment. We'll talk about this here in a little bit, but even further about a good name and what it means to you and me. But let's talk about some other names that were brought up in the Bible. Look at the name of Ahab. Look at the things that happened in their lives and their names. Things changed forever, right? Ahab did what in the sight of the Lord? He did evil in the sight of the Lord. Above all that were before him. Ahab was an evil man. He even the wrongs and things that were, had been done before him, he was worse than all of these guys. He was full of evil in everything that he did. 1 Kings 21, verse 25, we read, but there is none like unto Ahab, which did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel, his wife, stirred up. So Ahab is one of those names you don't hear people named Ahab this day and time, do you? You wouldn't name your child after him. Page 65. God said he would cut off the line of Ahab because of his wickedness, because of the evil that he had done. 1 Kings 21:21. Behold, I will bring evil upon thee, and will take away thy posterity, and will cut off from Ahab him that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up in the left. So he's going to end all his descendants. All the male children from that from his house going to be cut off, and God took care of that. Verse 23 and 24. Then we start reading about Jezebel, do we not? Ahab died in battle. Jezebel also. Then they went after Jezebel. Anybody remember the story about Jezebel and what happened to her? Who was it that came in under and after Jezebel? Ashford had the young men to throw her off the tower, and then he trod her under with his while he's on his horse, trod her under his underfoot, and then he said, "What is it, Jezreel?" He told three eunuchs to throw her down. They did. He trod her underfoot. This is in verse 33 of 1 Kings chapter 9. Sorry, 2 Kings chapter 9. Then they said, he said, well, why don't you go bury her? At least she was a queen's a queen. Go bury her. And what did they find of her left? Her skull. Feet, palms of her hand. Everything else had been ground into the dirt. Do you know? Pardon? Dogs ate. That's right. Excuse me. Okay, dogs ate part of it. That's right. You don't hear anybody named Jezebel this day and time, do we? You know, the name is something that's important that we're looking at how a good name we should be. Consider wanting to have a good name rather than be chosen for great riches. We hear people named David, Timothy, Ruth, Hannah. I went to the internet and looked up the first 100 most popular names in recent years, and for men, just to see what was there. First one they said was Jacob. Second one was Michael. Number three was Joshua. Number four, Matthew. Or we have a Matt in our family after Matthew. Number seven was Daniel. Number nine was Joseph. Number 13 was David. Then there's James, John, Jonathan, Noah. We've even got a Noah here. Caleb. We've got a Caleb here. Luke. Recognize any of those names? Why are they popular? Because they're people in the Bible who have a good name. And it's popular with that. We even have looked at some of the names of the ladies. They're not named after very many people in the Bible, the popular names. We have an Emma. We have an Emma here. Abigail, Emily, Charlotte. Some of those names are there because they have not been ruined through the ages. Then it goes into the things that were discussed about Jeroboam and Rehoboam and the things that happened with them. A good name. Here comes Jeroboam. The story is told how his garment was rent into 12 pieces, and even Solomon sought to kill him, and he escaped to Egypt. Later he came back. But who took over the kingdom after Solomon? Anybody remember? Rehoboam. Rehoboam took over, one of Solomon's sons. And do we remember some of the other things that Rehoboam did? What was it that the older people of the children of Israel were recommended that he do? But he didn't listen to them? Do what? He added to the burden. They said, your father had given and made us our burdens heavy. We would like for you to relax that a little bit. But the young men said, I don't do that. He even made it worse, did he not? You remember one of those things that Solomon said when he was while in Proverbs, lamenting about things that were vanity. Then in Ecclesiastes, as he's closing out his life, Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, verses 17 through 19. Solomon's talking, therefore I hated my life, because the work that was wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. For all is vanity, it's futility, it's excessive pride, it's vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor. Here's a man that had amassed enormous wealth, enormous power, and his wisdom was known throughout the world at that time. And yet he says, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. Look at the things that you and I amass in our life, try to build up and try to develop and hold on to. What are we going to do with them? We're going to pass them to somebody else if we don't use them up here. We're going to pass them on to somebody else. And Solomon also says, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? How many times have we seen people in this country who have inherited enormous sums of money from parents who have done things? They've inherited power and a name, not always a good name. They've inherited all these things, and look at what they do with it. They squander it, do they not? A lot of times. And look at what Rehoboam did. He inherits this enormous kingdom from his father. Solomon reigned for how many years? Anybody remember? 40 years, I believe it was about 40 years Solomon amassed. Of course, David started it. David gathered a lot of the materials, especially for building the temple. But David started a lot of it, but Solomon continued it, amassed enormous wealth, and Rehoboam goes through and squanders it, and trods it underfoot as such. And then also, of course, we know that the kingdom was split there. Rehoboam took two tribes. Jeroboam came back from Egypt and had the northern kingdom, ten tribes, and both of them took Israel under and caused Israel to sin. Jeroboam, 1 Kings 15, verse 34, then his name became associated with sin. In fact, he was labeled a man that made Israel to sin. And the wicked kings after him are said to have walked in the ways of Jeroboam and in his sin wherewith he made Israel to sin. What are some of the things that he did? Anybody remember those? Going through the lesson, he talked about them. He changed the place of worship. That's one place. That's one thing he did. He changed the place of worship. He made idols for them. He made idols for them to worship. Then, and that's kind of remarkable to me as well. You know, what was the very first of the Ten Commandments that God gave them? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. But what else did he say? Added to that, thou shalt not make yourself any graven or carved image or any likeness of anything. And God, not only did God say, thou shalt have no other gods before me, he also added to it, don't make any graven image. What did they do? He made a graven image. Changed the place of worship, made a graven image. He also changed the priesthood, did he not? And he assigned people who were not of the tribe of Levi. And he ordained a feast to change from the feast of the Passover. Four things he did. What happened to the northern kingdom? Pardon? They were pulled off into captivity. But how long before that happened? Anybody remember how many years? 400 years God suffered with them. He sent prophet after prophet to warn them, to try to get them to change. Finally, they're carried off into captivity. One other thing is very important about it. They carried off in captivity, and none of them came back. None of them came, of the northern kingdom came back. The southern kingdom also carried off in captivity. Some of those came back. Okay, now we're about to run out of time. A good name. Tom? You have to wonder why people would do that, but then look at Potiphar's wife. You know, she just was determined to ruin Joseph's good name. What does a good name do for you? Does it add stability to your life and to the lives around you? I think so. I think it adds stability to us so that people know that a man with a good name, you can trust what he says. You can trust that he'll do what he says he'll do. That adds stability to our society as well as to your family. Phil?
Your good name can carry on to other people too. I don't have to work day people that own a large name. And I didn't have any credit. When I told him who my grandfather was, your bird said, well, I'll own anything you want.
That's right, because of that good name that your grandfather had. That's very true. A good name goes on and on after you've gone. A good name also brings love and favor, which this is part of this verse that we're talking about. And that love and favor brings a lot of good to us as well. You know, I think that kind of goes to what he's talking about there, the people where they were willing to loan money and things. We've run out of time. I want to finish up with a couple of things, though, but and maybe we'll go back to this even a little bit. A good name in business, is it worth anything? What's it called in business? Anybody? Bob? What's a good name called? It's?
Ethics.
Pardon?
Ethics.
I'm thinking about in an intangible asset. You know, and in business, you can even put a price on that to some extent. It's a subjective price, of course, but, pardon?
Blue skies.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking also about, you know, even how important is it that we look at like things like a Better Business Bureau. We're looking for a good name. We'll go into that a little bit further. We'll stop right here, but I wanted to